Award-winning poet Becky Gould Gibson is the author of Heading Home. The book was the inaugural winner of the 2013 Lena M. Shell Book Contest, a contest awarded by the North Carolina Poetry Society and funded by the Poetry Council of North Carolina. Upon winning the award, Gibson's collection was published in 2014 by Main Street Rag Publishing Company of Charlotte, North Carolina. Heading Home is organized into four sections, and Gibson's work incorporates subjects from the natural world, discusses origin and tradition, and engages readers with playful conversation between historic figures. Gibson herself holds a PhD from UNC Chapel Hill, has taught literature, writing, and women's studies, mostly at Guilford College, and her poetry has appeared in journals such as the Connecticut River Review, Feminist Studies, Brooklyn Review, the Comstock Review, and also has appeared in several anthologies. Becky will be reading from Heading Home June 13th at 7 p.m. at Glenwood Coffee and Books, and also on June 26th at the Vin Master in Charlotte. Becky stopped by WFDD to tell me more about herself and her poetry. We began by discussing some pivotal moments in her own life and in her career as a writer. Tell me about the birth of your daughter, if you don't mind.
This is boasting, I suppose, but at the time, we believed in natural childbirth, and I was determined that I would not have any medicine. I probably should have, because it went on a long time, and I remember everything. And what's amazing is that 16 years later, I didn't write anything down, but 16 years later, when she left home for boarding school, suddenly I had to write this poem about her birth, and it was all there. And what astonished me about it was how indelible the impressions were and how close I had felt to the end of life and how the beginning of life and the end of life are just bound up together. I was not about to die, but I thought I could have, and that nature was betting on this new life, not on the old one. It was very strong, and I was very grateful that everything worked, but it wasn't about me. That was the amazing thing. For the first time in my life, something was not about me. And it was a force beyond my control, and that was astonishing. It was astonishing. And I think it's similar, but way more powerful than maybe the forces that come through us that we need to write. And there's some kind of energy from elsewhere, not from our personal life, but somewhere else, is similar to this feeling that I had. And whether you call it universal or you would call it the collective unconscious or whatever you call it, it's powerful and it's not really tied to a person's individual life as much as to the unity of all. So, yeah, I mean, I'll never get over that. And then when my granddaughter was going to be born, it was just a natural segue for me to involve myself by paying attention to this child in utero. But, of course, I wasn't actually giving birth, but I felt like I needed to do something. So I wrote a poem. And I think the poem was probably a charm because I was very worried. I always worry about life coming to fruition in the right way. And so this was my charm for her and for her mother.
You mentioned with the birth of your daughter, there was this event that signified life not being about you, kind of a turning point. And I found that I think a lot of your poems have a feeling of generosity. They're about other people, or they're dedicated to other people, or they evoke other people. And obviously, some of them you are speaking to, say, a writer or poet or religious figure of the past. So where in your poetry do you, your sense of yourself, where does that meet your sense of the other people that maybe you're reminded of in a work?
In the word, in the actual word. And I have to say that when I started writing poems that are addressed to people, whether they're imaginary people or historical people, or whether they're actually not people at all, but chicory flowers or goldfinch or whatever, that the poetry felt more urgent and more alive because it's like a letter to another being. And so there's a connection being made, and I think That's what poetry is about. It's about making connections. Why else would we do it? Because otherwise we'd feel very alone in a very confusing world. I'm not sure I answered your question, but I think that's one reason I write, is that in the word itself, or in the words that I'm maneuvering on the page, there is a meeting place between poet and person, or not just poet, but some other role that maybe I've devised for myself, and whoever it is. And there's a great amount of freedom here. I don't have to just be myself, and I can be all kinds of different personas, and I can address all kinds of different kinds of beings, and gives me a great sense of belonging to the world.
When you talk about connections, whether it's between yourself and your subject matter or the words on the page, I guess I'm wondering about the connections between all of the poems in this collection, because this is a full-length collection for you. And what does it mean when you publish a poem, perhaps independent of your other pieces, versus having the ability to collect them all together, order them, have sections as you do? There are four in here. How does this feel, perhaps, versus putting one piece out there alone?
Well, it's very, very different. It's as though you have one person leaving his family and going abroad and having to be himself or herself, or showing up at a family reunion and there you are among all your other family members. There are familial connections among these poems which may or may not appear to the reader at first, but I do think they are about interrelatedness between present, past, and the human and non-human worlds, and I think it is about that. But I had to think hard about what they were about, because I'd been writing these poems over at least 20 years, and the oldest are probably 20 years old, and the latest just a few months old. And what is the connection? Is this just a random collection of things? Well, it's not. And for one thing, it comes from a consciousness of a single person, yes. But I was glad to know that I really do have a kind of overall sense of why these poems belong together. This is a poem of 15 sonnets in sequence, and it's a double crown, which means these are linked sonnets. The last line of each sonnet then is repeated in the next first line of the next sonnet. So there's a linking that actually makes connections and linkages among the poems and also among the generations. Let's go to the sonnet at the point where the poem started. Because I didn't start out saying, oh, I'm going to write a poem about my grandchild in utero. Instead, I was bowled over by a sonogram that my daughter sent me, and it was about the 20th week, 19th or 20th week. The sonograms are very surreal, and they're very interesting images that got my brain moving. And we also learn that for a girl, she has all of her eggs from that moment. And I thought, oh my, that astonished me. In the bright globe of your mother's belly, you have your own seeds inside you. Eggs formed by week 19, ready to outlive you. Unborn daughters wait in your unborn womb. Brain takes up half your cranium. Plato, is he right? Knowing's only remembering what you knew before you were born? If so, what do you know you may never relearn? Now we know you're a girl. Will be woman. Will hook a bra without looking. May not have heard what some may yet tell you, that man was made before woman, that God forgot to make her until man reminded him. So first, man's best, the crown of creation. 8. So first, man's best, the crown of creation, not so. If you consider what comes last, not as less than, but rather perfection. Let the crown fall as it may. The contest will bore you. She sends the last sonogram, your vertebrae, an ancient fossil, coiled sea creature, Ouroboros, herringbone necklace, your face a mask of polished gold, for masquerade or funeral, your foot slender as the foot of a shoe model, leg and ankle, wood sign over a bootmaker's shop in a medieval village. Child, soon you'll arrive all pink and squealing, a piglet at the fair, fair and naked.
Good. And how old is your granddaughter now?
She's 4.
What's she like?
She's wild. She's crazy. She's fun. And she has her book. And the poem is dedicated to her, and someday she'll read it. Not yet.
That's wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
I can't tell you how quickly this was written, and usually my poems are arduous and take a long time, but it really comes from an encounter with a great blue heron. But what is different is that I was with my brother, and he is the one in the family who, my younger brother, who is the bird lover and the one who knows birds and identifies with birds, as I think was very clear from that day. So we were out at the wetlands on Rinalda Road, if you keep going out Rinalda, and just sat on a boardwalk and watched this great blue heron. The great blue. He calls you great blue with affection. Both of you keen-eyed fishers who stand patient for hours if need be, though he tells me he's not tied a fly in years. On a cold, cloudless day at the dead end of January, we watch from a floating boardwalk as you draw your long, narrow legs through the shallows. Head down, you step gingerly. Before the recent trouble, he made boats and fishing tackle boxes of walnut or mahogany with antique brass fittings. You use those huge wings to mount a log, maybe 6 inches higher than where you were standing, slip upon landing. Brief boarding. Why even bother for so little distance? Did you need a lift? A better view of the depths? Did it help relieve boredom? He chuckles with fraternal indulgence. He's had a rough time himself lately, the picking slender. Now he's hit bottom. Bird, why am I telling you this? What can you know of dejection? Dear heron, dear brother, birds of a feather, you're gray-blue, he's brownish, both of you balding, both of you, for the moment, beating the odds for survival, both of you with a foothold in chilly swamp waters. When you turn your head to one side, it almost disappears into light.
So you said that this poem didn't take you long to write, and I wonder, if that's the case, do you know that a poem's finished, or do you revisit it and say, I'm going to let it be for however long, and then I'm going to go back, and is there ever any editing that's done?
There's a lot of editing that's done, and my husband likes to tease me about all of my drafts, but I revise incessantly. Do you know when a poem is done? Probably not, but you do. It's an act of faith. It's a leap of faith, like anything else that's important. You just say, okay, it's done. How do you know? It pleases you. You think it's good throughout. No line jumps out and knocks you over the head and says, this is just stupid. I mean, you just sort of go with it. But sometimes poems take years. I've gone back to poems 15 years later and said, oh, now I know what to do with that. Sometimes it's a simple problem, but one that is beyond your technical powers at the time you write it. And eventually you may figure out how to solve it. It's a matter of problem solving, really, poetry. Like anything else, you just keep at it until you're pleased.
I'd love to talk about something that you do throughout Heading Home, which is bring some of the figures. We were mentioning historical or religious from the past into a more contemporary setting. And you have a lot of fun with that, from what I
can
tell. I do.
I love it. I love it.
And you also said poetry is playful. And I think that really shows through in these. So if you could talk about what it was like to take those characters and bring them either to a laundromat or to a movie theater.
Well, St. Paul of the Coin Laundry is very much the saint, we know, but also put in a coin laundry. I was at Weymouth writing, and I'm writing a serious poem about St. Paul is one of the characters, but sometimes I break out and just can't be serious any longer. And it so happened that I'd forgotten to take my sheets to Weymouth, so I had to use sheets that belonged to the house, and so I had to wash them. And if I'd remembered my sheets, this poem would not have happened, I'm quite sure. But anyway, so St. Paul comes to the coin laundry. And what I like about this poem is I've created a persona for the poem, and I really like this woman so much. And then there's one on St. Augustine where I take him with me to see the Passion of the Christ and imagine what it would be like for St. Augustine to see that movie from his perspective, but also mine. And I just like it. Watch your skirt, pull down the seat while I go back for candy corn and drinks. And for the time I'm writing the poems, I really feel like I'm in the presence of these figures. And it's not that I have control over who they were or what they wrote or what they did, but I feel like I have some kind of way of just connecting with them and making them more than just figures in a book. I mean, they're figures in my book. And they're figures in my consciousness. Once I've done this kind of work, they're with me as companions. And I can laugh at them and with them and just have fun.
Award-winning poet Becky Gould Gibson. Her latest collection is Heading Home. She'll be reading from Heading Home on June 13th at 7 p.m. at Glenwood Coffee and Books in Greensboro, and on June 26th at the Vin Master in Charlotte. Heading Home is the inaugural winner of the 2013 Lena M. Shell Book Contest, awarded for a full-length book of poetry by a North Carolina writer. The book contest was awarded by the North Carolina Poetry Society and funded by the Poetry Council of North Carolina. Heading Home was published by Main Street Rag Publishing Company of Charlotte, North Carolina. For more information and a full list of Becky's readings, visit our website at wfdd.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.